Welcome back, everybody, to the Full Press Coverage Pittsburgh Steelers podcast. This is your host, Parker Hurley. As always, I am with my co-host, Brian Harker of Steelers Wire. This is our episode 17. This is the preseason week one episode. Let's bring in Brian. Let's see how he's doing. And let's break down the Steelers' first game of the NFL season. It's not the regular season, but we're here, man. Brian, how excited are you?
I'm real excited. I figured we'd be sitting here talking about how this Eagle defensive front decimated the Steelers' offensive line, and other than a few plays in that first series, I thought the offensive line showed up real well and really opened things up for the three quarterbacks who played.
Yeah, you saw Fletcher Cox and why he was, you know, a Super Bowl winner early into that game. He looked pretty impressive, but yeah, like you said, from then on, it was really the Steelers' game, and I mean, we're going to talk about how, you know, almost none of the starters really on either side of the field played, you know, no big deal, this and that. But there's still a lot to take away from this game as far as depth players, as far as, you know, players fighting for the 53-man roster, players fighting to move up the depth chart. You know, we didn't see, you know, Big Ben and T.J. Watt and Antonio Brown and the boys, but there's still a lot to learn, and you started it off by saying, you know, so much to learn about the quarterback position, and we're just going to go through position by position and kind of give you our overlying thoughts after just one preseason game, because like I said, there is a lot more to learn than some people might think. You know, but like I said, it's not going to be Ben Roethlisberger. It's going to be the three backups. We talked all summer pretty much about how do you get the three backup snaps? You know, how do you figure it out between these guys? You know, you have Landry Jones, who started the game, went 4 for 4, 83 yards, a touchdown, no interceptions. Really was all on that big deep pass to Juju Smith-Schuster where he had a free play. He recognized it and he took advantage. So it was kind of something that I wrote, and you could look at it on fullpresscoverage.com, that it seems like Jones is about to be locked into this backup job. And I wrote that one thing that would kind of prove that he was locked into this backup job is that in this first preseason game, you get a quick glimpse at him, and if he looks fine, you kind of just put him back to the pine, because there's really two quarterbacks that we need to see what we have. It seems like from just throwing four passes in week one that the Steelers know exactly what they have in Landry Jones, and they're moving on to these other two guys. So Joshua Dobbs, 9 of 13, 91 yards with a touchdown and a pick. And then the third-round rookie, you know, the guy that everybody's kind of interested in and everybody's looking for, made his debut. Mason Rudolph was 7 of 12 for 101 yards. So I'll toss it to you, Brian. Did you kind of see it as, you know, Landry kind of got that drive as, like, you know, most preseason games, the starting quarterback gets that one drive, gets his feet under him, and then gets the pull. You know, the Steelers know so much what they have with Roethlisberger and even know what they have with Jones. Do you agree that they kind of just gave him that quick start, quick pull? They know what they have in him, and he's the backup. And what do you think of the other two guys?
You know, Jones always seems, no matter what, no matter how much prep time he's got, he always seems to get off to a slow start for whatever reason. And, you know, he really stepped up after that first drive. I mean, he got crushed by Fletcher Cox. And I can't remember who the other guy that was that got him, but that's the one thing that's great about Jones is he doesn't get flustered. He just does what he does. He gets out on the field, knows what he has to do. And he showed why he is the backup. There's no doubt. I mean, I wrote something at Steelers Wire how Mason Rudolph could become the number two, but it's clear that Jones is the guy. And that throw to Juju, he saw the flag and he kept going. He just has that presence of mind about him, and I think he, you know, really took it to another, not level, but he showed why that he is the solid number two.
Yeah, I agree completely, obviously. And you wrote it, and I agree. You know, Mason Rudolph is more physically talented, or there's a higher ceiling to what you can get with Mason Rudolph, but the Steelers know exactly what they have in Landry Jones. And, you know, that type of knowing what you have, and he can, you know, knows the system, and he just knows, you know, what to do. Like you said, in the speed of the game, when, you know, if something happens really quickly, he can, you know, react and change scripts quickly off of it. And I think that's one of the issues that you saw with not only Joshua Dobbs, but Mason Rudolph. Honestly, I thought Dobbs took a step forward, you know, from the last time we saw him in the preseason to this time. I thought it was really just pocket poison. I think, you know, if there's anything that I take away from the preseason every year, it's that the speed of the NFL is just so ridiculous, and it's not something that you can measure on TV. But you see it every year from when a rookie quarterback goes from college football and it looks like he's just the man and he's just, you know, things are so slow for him and he gets tossed into the fire of the NFL. Even in the preseason, even against backup players, you know, like Joshua Dobbs and Mason Rudolph are doing, there are moments where the game just looks so incredibly fast for these two. But then, like I said, you could see why Dobbs is ahead of Mason Rudolph currently. And you can see that, you know, he's a player who had a year of that NFL speed and Mason Rudolph really didn't. So I thought that he looked a little more poised climbing the pocket and handling, you know, all of the chaos around him. I actually thought that Rudolph looked pretty impressive handling the chaos around him. I would just say that, you know, probably his biggest issue so far is just moving off of script. And, you know, moving through progressions quickly, which, like I said, you know, the speed of, you know, it's – you got to get through those progressions so quick in the NFL compared to college. It's going to take Rudolph time. But I was honestly – I was pretty optimistic about Rudolph's debut as well. I thought he got the ball out pretty quickly. I thought he definitely, you know, he understands the playbook, things like that. And I like I said, I thought that he moved his feet well in the pocket under pressure. That's a good sign for a first start. So where do you stand on both of these two?
Dobbs, you never used to see him step up in the pocket like he did. It was either, if it's not there, he'd tuck the ball and he'd run. And he did that a few times, but right. he went through his progressions, like you said. He'd step up to make his throw. He made the right decisions. And on the throw that really impressed me was his touchdown pass to Damone Patterson. That was another case where you didn't see him do that last year. He would have took off and ran around the right side. Pick up 6 or 7 yards. So his patience has increased. His faith in what he's seeing is increased. And I thought he did a tremendous job. Rudolph, I expected him to make a couple of throws at least like Sudfeld did when he was on the field. You know, just kind of not rushing things, but not seeing the defense. Not looking through, going through his progressions. Rudolph, he looked comfortable. And that's what really stood out to me. He didn't make the greatest throws. But he made the right throws.
Yeah, I agree.
I liked how settled in he looked.
I agree, especially like you said, when you kind of look across the field and you saw, you know, Sudfeld, who, you know, some people are high on. I think Dobbs and Mason Rudolph both looked a little more poised. Maneuvering the pocket and looking around. You know, I would say about Rudolph, you know, two things for sure, because they were questions that I had coming in. You know, we talked about, I think, on the first quarterback podcast, how his hand size actually doesn't meet the threshold. And he fumbled a ball, you know, last night, and it really, you know, it didn't really get hit away from him or anything like that. It wasn't too crazy of a play. He already has a fumble to his name. And there was another one. He threw the ball down the field to James Washington. You know, Washington made a contested catch, but it was a little bit underthrown. And, you know, me saying Washington making a contested catch underthrown is something that I said a lot at, you know, from the Oklahoma State tape, and it's still on the Steelers. So he did look really good, and the speed of the game was probably, you know, it is the biggest concern that anybody has with a rookie quarterback. So it was the bigger positives outweighed the negatives. But those two things I'm just going to continually have my eyes on because I need to see progression and, you know, got to hold on to the football, Mason. That hand thing's going to be interesting. But we'll move into running backs, and we'll kind of just start with the starter because I just want to get your main thoughts on him. 4 for 25 was James Conner, but there's been a lot of talk about, you know, he's you know, in the best shape of his life. You know, he's completely free of all the cancer-like symptoms, and he should only just get, you know, so much better than, you know, we talked about how, you know, he has to go from beating cancer to the NFL combine, to getting an agent, to training camp, to, you know, you're the face of Pittsburgh, you know, number one jersey sale. Just so much for a player in one season that it really feels like this might be a big leap forward in year two. 4 rushes for 25 yards. I thought he looked really decisive in those rushes, though, and he got downhill with power. I was really impressed with his performance in the running game, but the big questions were in the passing game. What can Conner bring? Can he bring anything at all? He had a catch for 9 yards. I thought it was a really good catch, especially for a player who came in with, you know, questions of how much can he bring in the passing game. But he also had a few pass blocking reps that I didn't think were too great either. So passing game impact, I would probably put him at a wash from what I saw in the preseason. But as far as is he in good shape and is he running, you know, probably as hard as he's ran in 3 years, absolutely yes, I would agree with that. So where do you stand on Conner? Because it seems like, you know, he's the clear number two behind Le'Veon Bell.
you said it right. He showed decisiveness when he ran, and he didn't hesitate. But I like the fact that he showed a little bit of wiggle. You know, it wasn't like last year he went down on first contact. You know, he was a little shifty. He lowered his shoulder and destroyed that safety from Philadelphia, which I don't know that we saw that out of him last year. I think he was just treading water. So I was impressed by that. Now, his pass blocking, yeah, he got lit up. But, I mean, he got over in position to make it. But maybe it's just me, but I just took into account, okay, that's the Philadelphia Eagle pass rush. And they do that to a lot of people. So I'm going to hold off judgment as far as, you know, is he better at that? Does he still have a ways to go? Like I say, just because, you know, that's the Eagles. And, you know, they did a number on that Steeler offensive line that first series or two.
Yeah, I hear you, and I'm not going to kill Connor for, you know, struggles in pass blocking, but those are the issues, so, you know, it's just, we're just going to continue to look for it, you know, continue to look for it. But, yeah, the buzz is good, and like I liked how you said, you know, you liked his wiggle. I thought, yeah, he got skinny, like he never really has been able to before, and I think that has to do with, he cut some pounds, and he's in great shape, but like you said, the power is still there, so... rounding into more of a complete back, you know, it was only one preseason game, but you'd love to see the momentum move into week two for this guy. I have a question about Jalen Samuels that I kind of want to throw at you, and it has to do with his usage in the preseason game, and, you know, we didn't really talk about this, so it was interesting the way that they used him, in my opinion, because in the first 4 minutes, he's on the field, you know, he's in there with, you know, quote-unquote the starters, you know, Le'Veon Bell, and everyone's not in there, but he's out wide, and he catches a pass within 4 minutes of this football game. And then you don't really see him much when the starters get pulled, and, you know, they start to go to Stephen Ridley, and they start to go to Toussaint as, you know, the backups behind James Conner, and you start to understand that Jalen Samuels is the number four running back on the depth chart. I thought it was just interesting that, you know, despite the fact that he's number four in the depth chart, we're still using him with quote-unquote the starters at the very beginning of this game. So in my opinion, there is potentially a specific role for Jalen Samuels. And I don't know what the role is. And, you know, it's kind of like a new position. And we talked about how he's not really a position. And I called him, you know, he's a move player. He's a, you know, a versatile player. The Cowboys are trying to use Tavon Austin similar to this, like, they call it a web back, a whatever back. I talk about the Patriots do it with Rex Burkhead. Brian, you talk about this all the freaking time about line up Samuels and Le'Veon Bell, and either of them you can motion out wide, and they're a wide receiver. It adds a lot of dynamic schematic issues to the game. So I just thought that was weird. You know, did you notice that at all? And were you thinking about that they threw the ball to Samuels with the starters early, and then they reserved Samuels as a running back until he was the fourth man? So it feels like he's like the number one on the depth chart in terms of quote-unquote move player or whatever this position is, whatever this role is. He's number one on the depth chart despite the fact that he's the number four running back. Do you kind of understand what I'm saying with this?
Yeah, they know what he is. When the first team's out there, the fact that they lined him out wide tells you that, all right, we like the versatility of this kid. He's going to be a part of our main package. And then they put him out, they brought him back in with the Forest Teamers, also saying that, hey, you know, he's still a running back, and we're going to give him carries, but this is his main function. And, you know, he's the type of weapon that the Steelers really have never had before, but he's the kind of weapon that's been used to attack them successfully.
Right.
So I think they're trying to – they know where Howie fits in, and now it's just a matter of getting him comfortable. To me, that's what it all comes out to. And yeah, I kind of noticed that, and I thought it was odd at first. And I had similar thoughts, you know, as I was leaving work last night, that they really like this kid. And by all accounts, yeah, he's not position centric to be sure. But I am really curious as to how they're gonna work him in, and what situations they're gonna work him in at.
Right, because I think the questions are, between the tackles, are you decisive as a runner? And, you know, he hasn't shown that yet. And pass blocking, what do you bring as a pass blocker? He hasn't shown that yet. And you can't have a guy, you know, that's why he's behind Stephen Ridley and Fitzgerald Toussaint, because that's not a running back. You know, if those are your big questions, you know, you are the fourth string running back, or you are buried in the depth chart at running back. But like you said, it's clear that there's a role for this guy on the roster in year one, in my opinion. I just want to see if this momentum continues for him, because it just seems like there's a role for him, even though they don't know what they have as a pass blocker and they don't know what they have as a between the tackles runner, and he's a running back. It's just, it's going to be fascinating to continue to watch this. Moving on to Fitzgerald Toussaint and Stephen Ridley. I thought both of them were awesome last night. 7 for 29 on the ground with a touchdown for Fitz. Fitz did really well in pass protection. 10 for 14 on the ground for Stephen Ridley wasn't too great, but then he had 3 for 45 in the air, which you really like that. So between the two, you know, we were arguing, you know, only one's going to make it. Maybe neither of them make it. Between the two, did either of them stand out? And are you kind of thinking either way, you know, are you saying neither, or are you saying definitely one of them's going to make it at this point?
I think they'll both make it, to be honest with you, but you've known my feelings in the past on Fitzgerald Toussaint.
Right.
And I got to be honest with you, I didn't almost recognize him when he was running the ball. He's another guy that had a quick burst.
Yep.
He's another guy that was shifty. I mean, he smoked that safety too in open field. What is it, on a 17-yard carry? Yeah. So,
yep.
He's added something to his game. Ridley, he's a versatile guy. I think as far as running the ball goes, he'll be fine. I think they both ultimately end up making a roster with Samuels as the number four guy.
Yeah, that's interesting.
On the depth chart for running back.
Right, and that's interesting because you can, like we said, because Samuels is a, you know, is almost his own position as a move player. You know, you kind of just take away the extra receiver, and you do kind of have, you know, four running backs there anyways. So, yeah, I mean, when I was watching it at first, I was watching Toussaint, and like you said, you know, he was running with power. You know, someone bounced off his legs. He had a couple good pass protection reps, and you know, that's when I'm thinking, you know, he's definitely ahead of Samuels as a running back, and he's also looking like he's poised to make the team. Like you said, you know, you add in he also has special teams value. And then late in the game, Stephen Ridley is just, you know, providing momentum like crazy in the passing game, which is not the way that I expected Stephen Ridley to provide momentum. So I'm probably leaning Fitz over Ridley at this point, but was really impressed with the way that Ridley played, and definitely think that both are completely in the mix, like you said, heading into the next game. So overall, you know, we're moving right along, and I think we're pretty impressed with what's going on so far. To get into the wide receivers, you know, AB didn't play, not a big deal. Juju Smith-Schuster, 1 for 71 and a touchdown. I'm probably not going to get into that too much. I'm not too worried about that. James Washington, 2 for 44. Like I said, he had that contested catch from Mason Rudolph. That was really nice. But, you know, otherwise, you know, he was a second-round rookie who, you know, didn't see the field too much. So that, I think that was a good sign. Kind of moving down, Justin Hunter, 1 for 4, you know, didn't see anything from him. Marcus Tucker was 2 for 14, and he had a nice special teams play. But the big, you know, the winner of the night was Damon Patterson, who 6 for 77 and a touchdown. He had, you know, an incredible touchdown catch, like you said, off of the hands of Joshua Dobbs. So, you know, probably Damon Patterson's the big name here. You know, we talked about him on the wide receiver podcast, and I think you said, you know, he's a Youngstown State kid, and watch out for him to make the practice squad. He got the momentum, and he's gotten you looking pretty smart right now. So, how do you feel about the boy Damon moving forward? And anything else really stand out for the receivers for you?
Well, I like the little work that Marcus Tucker got in. Yeah. You know, once again, he's just a football player. He's scrappy. He proved his worth on special teams, downing that punt, what, the half-yard line?
Mm-hmm.
He wasn't called upon as much as I thought he would be based on his performance in the last preseason game against Carolina last year, but he proved his worth. And I'm wondering if, you know, if it's in the back of, you know, Randy Fickner's mind and the coaches that, all right, we know what we have in Tucker. Let's see what we got in Patterson. And Patterson ran – he ran real nice routes.
Yep.
He showed toughness, accurate backs. And he, obviously he's not afraid to go across the middle. And I know it's early to say, too early to say that this guy's a lock to make the roster, but I tell you what, he's got a huge leg up on everybody else that's on the bubble after that performance last night. I mean, he just looked like a seasoned receiver.
Right. He's definitely standout over all those lower guys. And, you know, maybe he's creeping up on a guy like Marcus Tucker. Maybe he's creeping up on Justin Hunter and Darius Hayward-Bey, who, like we said, are, you know, all of them are pretty much on the right on the border. Like you said, you know, despite Hunt or Tucker having a huge game, he made a few special teams plays, which is really important for him. You know, arguably the most important factor for him. But, you know, Eli Rogers is probably going to be on the pup. He profiles similarly to Eli Rogers. It just feels like he can slot into that spot for the time being until they can get Rogers back, and then you figure it out from there. But in my opinion, you know, due to his special teams and due to the fact that he was kind of seeing the field, he's just ahead of Justin Hunter to me. There's been reports that Justin Hunter and Ben have, you know, or Ben has kind of been yelling at Justin Hunter for running the wrong routes or turning his body the wrong way due to, you know, the location of some of his passes. And, you know, 1 for 4 tonight, I don't even see, you know, if Mike Tomlin and, you know, Ben are kind of in the coach's room together and Mike's just like, hey, do you want any snaps with Justin Hunter in the preseason? You know, I already talked about Ben might only play a series or two in week 3. That's probably the only way I would play him. I just don't see Ben saying, you know, yeah, I need a couple snaps with Justin Hunter just in case. I could see him saying, you know, hey, if AB's not going to play, let me get Marcus Tucker in there. So that's kind of how I see that situation. And like you said, Damon Patterson, the arrow is just obviously, just very obviously pointing up. He had that one catch where he went up and got it, got hit in the back, kind of got, you know, dinged up a little bit, but I wouldn't be too worried about that. He does look a little thin, but I personally think that unless he really continues, you know, what he was doing, I think he's on the track to, you know, being a strong practice squad player. But if he's doing what he's doing right now every week, like you said, he's easily on the roster, and I see no reason why you would have to, you know, why you would worry about keeping Justin Hunter and, you know, worry about this guy clearing waivers. You know, you just cut Hunter and keep him if you're worried about Patterson clearing waivers. But I still think he's a little bit of a ways away from that, but we'll definitely see on that. Moving into the tight ends, I don't think anything too crazy happened with them. Farrell McKevra had that one catch on a screen from Mason Rudolph. Courtland Scott Lynn Williams, I think that was your boy, had a catch for 5 yards. Jesse James, I don't think really did anything. He had a catch for 2 yards. Vance McDonald didn't play. I don't think Xavier Grimble did anything in the passing game. Did anyone stand out for you?
I took a look at Christian Scotland Williamson only because it's his first NFL game.
Right.
And, you know, there were a few instances where he kind of looked lost, but I think he's going to pick it up quick. I like that. Jesse James.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he still can't run after the catch, but, you know, like I said, I like his hands. I was hoping to see more Xavier Grimble, to be honest with you. Bucky Hodges, I don't even think he did anything. But I still like Christian Scotland Williams, and he's probably just a practice squad player.
Uh-huh.
But he still showed that, you know, he belongs on the football field. That was my take on the tight ends, to be honest with you.
Yeah, I don't know if Bucky Hodges even played because, you know, I think because he was signed so late, I don't know if he did see the field, it was just so minimally. I don't think he knew the playbook or anything yet, so I think he's a guy that next week you start to look into. We didn't really get to talk about him because he just recently signed, but he's an interesting player, a sixth-round pick. He's like 6'5", can stretch the middle of the field. Think, you know, like maybe a chunkier, you know, a bit slower version of what the Steelers wanted from Ladarius Green. Could be what you're getting in Bucky Hodges, but I think the next couple weeks will be what we really see in him. You talked about it with Courtland Scott Williams. He was really, the only player that jumped out to me, too. There was just, you know, one or two players I was like, oh, hey, you know, who's that guy? Kind of just because he does stand out and probably a practice squad player, in my opinion, just due to, you know, where they are at the tight end position. But there's no issue. Like you said, you know, sometimes the game might be a little too crazy for him at this point. So feed him repetitions, get him on the practice squad, and then, you know, we'll be talking about him at this point next year, talking about hopefully his progression. To move on to the offensive line, Villanueva started, David DeCastro started, which I was surprised. I think David DeCastro like probably requested to start, but he got the start, which was nice for him. Really didn't take anything away from those guys. Chuks Okorafor, the rookie, he started on the right side. I believe then he moved over to the left side. BJ Finney left the game early. I forget what they said the issue was. But did you really take anything else away from the offensive line yet?
The only thing, honestly, that really stood out was Fletcher Cox just destroyed DeCastro.
Yeah.
You know, I think Fletcher Cox, his motor, he's already in mid-season form, so to speak. I thought they settled down and did a pretty nice job, though. after that first series. They protected the quarterbacks pretty well. I think I'm pretty sure that Landry Jones doesn't feel that way. But I mean, overall, you know, they look pretty good. You know.
Yeah, I thought. No, you're fine. I'm just a guy. Fletcher Cox is just so good, in my opinion. I love watching that dude play. So, you know, even though it was against the Steelers, he's just so freaking good. I would just say the Finney issue, you know, probably you're just shutting him down. You know, Ramon Foster's already on the pine till the start of the season. The last thing you want is depth issues. Finney and Foster, you know, hopefully one of them is just ready for week one is all I would really say. You know, you have Matt Filer. That's really all the depth you have. So, you know, give Filer as many reps as you can, because I think he's like a tackle slash guard player. So just get him on the field moving forward. I don't even if Finney's news is better than, you know, some people think, I don't need to see much of Finney the rest of the time. So moving on to the defensive line, you know, Tuitt and Hayward, nothing. Javon Hargrave played actually deep into the game, and he was in the backfield a lot. So Hargrave looked good, but I mean, I was, you know, just wondering why we're seeing so much of him. And then, you know, Alulu and LT Walton. I don't think anyone really stood out to me. You know, LaVon Hooks was still ahead of Josh Frazier. Greg Gilmore, I don't think really got many snaps at all. I saw him a little bit. Did anyone really stand out to you so far?
I'll tell you who kind of did was Josh Frazier's a lot quicker than I envisioned him being. There's a screenplay that him and Hargrave blew up. And, you know, Frazier was right there every step of the way. So I really liked what I saw out of him. He had a few, obviously, rookie mistakes. But, I mean, overall, you know, he's someone I think to keep an eye on. He's in a great situation, and he's playing behind some people he can learn from. Did McCullers even show up at all?
Yeah, I was actually about to say, I didn't really notice Frazier too much. It might have been that play. You know, my eyes were just on Hargrave. But I actually did see Big Dan, actually. I think it was a goal line situation. He made a play in the backfield. So it seems like Greg Gilmore, at least from the reports in camp to his playing time to, you know, kind of what he's done in week one, it seems like he's more destined to the practice squad from what we talked about in the defensive line preview. So maybe, you know, we talked about Big Dan, you know, was going to be on the way out. It might just be, you know, Big Dan and Joshua Frazier fighting for the last spot. So might just be zeroing in on two players for one spot here moving forward on the defensive line. That's probably how I'm seeing that right now. You know, the edge group was arguably the most fascinating of all of these, you know, due to the fact that Bud Dupree and TJ Watt weren't playing. And we already, you know, we had a podcast where we were questioning the depth of some of these guys, you know, looking at some undrafted free agent players' tape, and, you know, some of these undrafted free agents actually ended up having to step up. Anthony Chiclo, you know, didn't really do too much. You know, Keon Adams, you know, nothing really too much either. You know, he was a seventh-round pick, making really his rookie debut after a lost season. But he's been dealing with some injuries, some questions too. But really the two guys, in my opinion, you know, Matthew Thomas went off the edge, but we'll kind of talk about him with the linebackers. But the two guys, in my opinion, that stepped up was Farrington Huguenin. I believe he's from Louisville, you know, second-year player, and Ola Adeniye, who, you know, we kind of talked about on our Edge Rushers podcast. You know, we compared him, you know, we didn't really compare him, but we said, you know, he's got the size of James Harrison. He's played so low to the ground like James Harrison. And then all of a sudden, you know, his first snap in the second half or second snap in the second half, he's low and he's around the edge doing exactly what we said. He's doing his James Harrison impersonation, forcing a fumble. So good call by both of us on that one. Really like Ola. I wrote about Ola too as one of the players. So he's moving up. And like we said, you're looking at this depth, you know, Bud Watt and Chiclo, you know, is it Keon Adams? Because like I just said, Ola and Farrington Huguenin arguably outplayed him. So there's roster spots on the line here. How do you think the boy Ola did you like Huguenin, and did you see anything from Adams? Because I didn't really see much.
No, I mean, Adams, he was moving around. I don't know that he influenced anything on defense. I think he's just getting his feet back underneath him from, you know, missing his entire rookie season. But Ola and Huguenin, oh my gosh. I mean, they were everywhere. Yeah. I mean, whether they made a play or not, they influenced where that play went. And a lot of times, as you know, an outside pass rusher, I mean, that's what you're looking for. They, you know, they would flush him towards you know, where everybody else was to make the play. So I really liked what I saw out of both of them.
Yeah.
To be honest with you.
You made your call with Damon Patterson. I'm making it with Ola. I think he's making this team, man. I really do. I thought from the second he was on the field, like you said, he was impacting the game. I just thought that it was so impressive, and he's so low to the ground, and, you know, you could probably get some special team snaps out of him. Huguenin, I do like him. I just have Ola a tick higher, and I think that he was really impressive. You know, so was Huguenin, and one of those two I think is honestly a lock to make this roster, and I'm going to put my chips on the undrafted free agent from Toledo. So there's my big call of the podcast. To move inside, Matakevich, Bostic, and Vince Williams all kind of did a little dance together. You know, you saw Bostic with Williams, Matakevich with Williams, and even Bostic with Matakevich. So they sorted that out a little bit. Let's just start with those three, actually, and then we'll kind of get into the depth three. So how do you think those three kind of parsed each other out?
I thought they complemented each other well. Matakevich, I think it was on the touchdown pass to the Philly tight end, where it looked like he slipped in pursuit of Sud, what's the quarterback from Philly? What's that?
Sudfeld.
You know, I think that turf was causing problems because quite a few players slipped. But Matakevich looked more explosive than I recall seeing him last year. A little bit quicker. Not saying early regular season form, but I liked what I saw out of Matakevich. Galambos was another one that I was kind of impressed with. You know, he made a few plays, it looked like. Bostic, he missed on a tackle or two. But overall, I could see why he's running with the first team. LJ Fort didn't make much noise, but he was another guy that, you know, he kind of influenced how some plays went. I mean, overall, you take away that first defensive series or two where they just look like, you know, they're getting back into game form. Nervous maybe isn't the right word, but they weren't on their game. I thought everybody kind of settled in on the inside as the game wore on. So, you know, I don't have too many concerns, but I did like the way everybody was moving around. I thought that was the big thing I took from it. They moved around good, looked quick.
Yeah, I personally thought Bostic had the most momentum coming away from this game. He did have that missed tackle, and he looked somewhat questionable in space sometimes. But there were a couple other times where you did see him. Something that I wrote about on Full Press Coverage was about how he can, you know, he's kind of pointing people out and, you know, showing people things. And there was one time he was on the field with Matakevich, and he was pointing something out to him. So, you know, those two are competing with each other, and, you know, the argument is probably the smartest player should win. And, you know, we already know Bostic is more athletic than Matakevich. So, you know, for him to be pointing things out to him in any situation, I think is a huge plus for Bostic. He ran with the ones. We talked about how in OTAs, Matakevich was the number one. And then first week of camp, Matakevich was the number one. I think that, you know, on Monday and probably moving forward, it's going to be John Bostic next to Vince Williams. With some Matakevich sprinkled in. That's probably just another call that I have. But we'll see. I think that the momentum from the preseason from Bostic, from just like a play caller and from a depth chart standpoint, I think it's in his favor. Like you said, LJ Fort, I mean, he actually did look like when he was with Galambos, he was kind of pointing some things out as well. So that was nice that, you know, you could see him actually figuring things out in traffic. But like you said, Galambos was probably the better player on tape from a physical aspect in that game when those two were on the field together. And then lastly was Matthew Thomas, you know, who we obviously all have our eyes on, you know, the UDFA who, you know, arguably could have been drafted a lot higher, but he hasn't been able to get on the field much. He just looks so fast, like extremely explosive, and it's probably understandable due to the fact that he only started playing in the second half of this game when, you know, the small school kids, you know, the not very athletic kids who are fighting for any type of job are playing. You know, Matthew Thomas is just this standout athlete who has, you know, some other questions and some other reasoning as to why he's on the field with these players. But he just looks so freaking athletic and so fast compared to them. I think that, you know, it is all between the ears with him. And once he starts to get that, we talked about off the air how he was, you know, a step or two away from not just one sack, but two sacks. you know, just speed rushing off of the edge and blitzing downhill and getting out in space. So, Matthew Thomas didn't do anything to get the momentum moving, you know, too far forward, but he is what we thought he is, and that already means that he's probably making the roster. So, you have anything else you want to add to the linebackers, or you want to move on to the corners?
Yeah, I had one question for you. With the way they deployed Thomas on a few occasions, do you think there's a chance that they could make him that we can move him between inside and outside?
I mean, I think that was mainly due to the fact that, like I said, when you don't have Bud and Watt and you already are so questionable on depth, and like I said, I think Keon Adams was dealing with something over the past couple days. I think that was more of a depth thing, but I also, you know, I've plugged a few articles so far, Google Parker Hurley 3-3-5 defense, where I talk about how the 3-3-5 might be the way to go, and the fact that you could be so versatile within it. He could play, you know, the strong side, like you said, as a pass rusher, as a three linebacker set. He could play the strong side off of the ball, or he could be a weak side player and play in space off of the ball. So I think that they love his versatility, and they love that he can pass rush, and they love that he can blitz off of the edge. And you know who else used to, you know, shift down to the edge a little bit and blitz off of it was Ryan Shazier, you know, the last couple years. So, I don't think he's really an edge player. He's only 235 too, one thing you got to think about. So I don't think he's an edge player, but I definitely think that you can put him down off of the edge and have him run free with speed, definitely. So I think Thomas is on the team, and it's just, you know, at what point can you, you know, utilize him, and at what point is he more than just a special teamer? We'll see. To move on to the cornerbacks, I don't think anything too crazy. You know, Artie Burns was out there looking fine. Cody Sensabaugh had an interception. Cameron Sutton had an interception. They both looked pretty good. I know Deshaun Phillips gave up a big pass, and I think Brian Allen was fine. Did anyone stand out to you?
Cameron Sutton stood out to me.
Yeah.
The amount of ground that he could cover is pretty impressive. And he, like I say, he already looks like he's been in the league for, you know, 3, 4, maybe 5 years. He stood out. Deshaun Phillips stood out for the wrong reasons, because he just got torched by Gibson.
Right.
I can't imagine that he was excited to go into that locker room at halftime. Brian Allen showed some punch, you know. I liked what I saw out of him. And then the other guy that I watched, Malik Golden. I know he's not a corner.
Yeah.
But I thought that, you know, he made some really nice plays and a nice breakup. But like I say, overall, I thought the secondary, the cornerbacks mainly, I thought they did a nice job.
Yeah, Sutton was really – he's the name to talk about moving, you know, away from the position. And it's just, you know, it just feels like no matter what's going to happen, he's going to get on the field next year, you know. He's probably the backup outside. He's definitely the backup in the slot. You know, you wonder, is it going to be him or Terrell Edmonds in the dime? It's probably, you know, he's probably leading the pack right now to get on the field as the sixth defensive back. And then there's articles already being written that they're going to run seven defensive backers on the field. And Sutton would probably be installed as, you know, like the Mac linebacker who, you know, who I kind of was talking about with John Bostic, kind of has to point things out for everybody in the box. So that's the type of player you're getting from Cam Sutton. You know, it's like, where is he going to play? Doesn't really matter. Don't really know. But it seems like he's going to get on the field. And like you said, he kind of stands out due to the fact that been there, done that, even though he's never really been there and he hasn't really done any of this. So, yeah, impressive with Sutton. And it's mainly mental acumen. And that's going to get him in the situation where he's going to be able to play a lot of spots on the field. So that's huge for a player like him. And it does help us transition easily into the safeties because I thought Terrell Edmonds was doing a lot of the same. You know, he was in man coverage arguably more than you would expect from a Steelers safety to be. So, you know, I thought Edmonds had a pretty good game. Morgan Burnett got the start. You know, nothing too crazy from there. I thought Nat Bury played pretty well. You talked about Malik Golden. It seems pretty clear that Malik Golden is ahead of Marcus Allen, you know, the fifth-round draft pick rookie. Arguably, is Jordan Dangerfield ahead of Marcus Allen? Is a question as well. Where do you stand overall in the safeties?
I was wondering the same thing myself because I don't recall if I saw Marcus Allen get much playing time last night with the job that Malik Golden and Jordan Dangerfield did. Maybe that's the plan. Maybe let Marcus Allen kind of grow, let him develop. Overall, I was impressed that looked like a whole different group than we've seen back there in the last couple of years. I mean, guys were just literally flying around, making plays. They were always around the ball carrier, the receiver. Nobody stood out as far as being out of position. So right there, that's an improvement over anything we've seen, you know, in the last 3 to 4 years.
Yeah, I didn't mind. None of the safeties really stood out, and that's probably a good thing. Like I said, I thought Terrell Edmonds was great for, you know, a first-star rookie, you know, a player that everyone said, you know, was just so raw, it's going to take so long for him. I thought he looked completely fine in, you know, probably some easy situations, but I thought he looked completely fine. Yeah, my question with Marcus Allen, and it's kind of just based on, you know, things I'm reading, what I'm trying to, you know, put together, this and that, and, you know, you always assume, you know, nobody's going to hit a draft class out of the ballpark, and, you know, you typically don't have your entire draft class make the team, and maybe he's just that player, because what you're hearing is a lot of out of camp is that he's just in the box. Like, he's really not even playing safety. They're almost, you know, pretty much moving him into linebacker, you know, and the only time he's seeing the field for any sort of significant snaps are as, you know, this pseudo type of linebacker, whether it be a dime or dollar situations. You know, that's really the only time he's getting real snaps. Otherwise, he's running with, you know, third, fourth team players. So my theory, or, you know, something that I'm thinking is, are you hiding him on, you know, hiding him through the preseason, clears waivers, spends a year on the practice squad, you know, you get him in the gym, you bulk him up to 215, 220, and he's kind of just a box player next year. It seems like that's the idea, and if you watch his pre-draft tape, you know, I wrote about it, and you can probably Google his name, Marcus Allen Parker Hurley, and find an article where he just gets canned in coverage a lot, you know, and he's just not going to be a safety that you want in coverage. But, you know, as a linebacker, you know, you could probably figure it out. So maybe that's what they're doing with Marcus Allen. And like I said, he's buried on the depth chart in camp. He's only seen the field as a linebacker in camp. So it seems like if you were predicting today, Malik Golden would probably make the team over him. You know, you could argue Jordan Dangerfield as well. So that's where I stand there. Do you want to hit anything else as far as, you know, what I just said with Allen, or do you have anything else to kind of wrap us up here for the first preseason podcast?
Well, that's exactly what I was going to ask you about Marcus Allen, is do you think that he might be a candidate? Because he's a big guy.
Yeah.
He really is. And he would be a perfect candidate to put 10, 15 pounds on him and move him to inside linebacker, because he does have the speed to do a lot of the things that they like their inside linebackers to do. He covers a lot of ground. He does – you know, he could cover backs out of the backfields or maybe even tight ends. So, yeah, that's what I was going to ask you, if you thought that was a real possibility, because that would really, you know, be the only reason that you wouldn't see him on the field in a safety position.
I definitely think that that's, at this point, that's what you're doing. And, you know, it just seems like, you know, like we said, you were impressed by Golden. I saw Dangerfield flash a little bit. I don't think anything changed from last night to say, you know, well, you know, Golden or Allen's going to have to get up there with the third team. You know, no, he's not. He's still buried, completely buried at safety. So, you know, and it's going to be easy for him to clear waivers when you're a fifth round pick who's buried on the depth chart at safety, who, you know, doesn't barely play in the preseason. You're going to clear waivers extremely easily, and you're going to get to the practice squad. So definitely possible, and it's the way that it's been trending so far, and it's not surprising at all when you talk about his coverage. So that's something that I'm looking forward to in the next one. You know, just how do you continue to utilize the safeties, you know, and really just, you know, looking for some more positive momentum from, you know, players like Matthew Thomas, from, you know, Huguenin and Ola, you know, wondering, you know, see Chooks go from one game to the next, and you know, James Conner and Jalen Samuels are probably the guys that I'm looking for, and your boy Damon Patterson. So, yeah, that was Brian Harker at Steelers Wire. We'll probably be back on Tuesday or Wednesday to do a preview podcast, kind of recap some of the players that I just highlighted there in the last 30 seconds, and, you know, now what we expect from them in this next game. Or, you know, like I said, you're going to see maybe, is John Bostic taking first team snaps solely now, you know, based off of this game, or are there any changes solely off of this game? We'll recap some of that on Tuesday. We'll be back on Friday again to recap the Thursday game. I believe they play the Green Bay Packers. So that was Brian Harker. He's on Steelers Wire. Check out everything he does there. Pittsburgh Sports Zone as well. I'm Parker Hurley at FPC_Steelers. at Parker Hurley, at full press coverage. Follow everything I've been writing about the Steelers there. Had five players to watch for the first preseason game. We're going to have takeaways, should be out in the next hour, and we're going to have five players to watch for next week's preseason game as well. So stay tuned. We're really kicking things up here, and we're really getting ready for the start of the regular season. It's going to be fun, man, and this is only just the beginning right now. So you guys have a great day, and we'll be right back next week.